Yeah, they say Dublin's a dangerous place to go eating and drinking, and occasionally they're proven correct, yeah.
He's in the Daniel Day-Lewis of coming up with excuses.
When I commit,
I live commit. Every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you, as always, to look ahead to the start of Ireland's European qualifying campaign and also to look back on all the action from the weekend in the WSL and the Conti Cup, where things got a little bit heated. But who doesn't love to see a little bit of managerial spice being brought into the game? Joining me to look back on all this, as ever, is Captain Karen Duggan. And then a little bit later on, we'll be having the one and only Gilly Flaherty alongside us to look ahead a little bit to England and also look at all that league action as mentioned. But Karen, how are you? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. Surprisingly fresh after a bank holiday. So yeah, I'm ready for it this week.
That's what we like to hear. A bit of freshness after a bank holiday is always nice. And it's a beautiful sunny day in Dublin, which is adding to the feels of it's actually not the worst bank holiday Tuesday back. Karen, we'll start with a bit of Ireland because we will be going into the WSL a little bit later on when we have Gilly here. A couple of days out, we've been talking about these games a lot over the last weeks since we learned who our opponents are going to be. A couple of days out, what are the feels? Have they settled at all or are you still a little bit anxious? We had the news today, very unfortunately, that Niamh Fahey definitely isn't going to be available for either game with a calf strain. So that's a bit of a blow, but I think we expected it after Matt Beard's comments last week.
Yeah, we did expect it, but it's still disappointing because I think she's such an influential character on the team and she is the type of player who brings other players' games up. And particularly after the last display against Wales, the backline was uncharacteristically shaky. And that needs to be absolutely nailed on point if we're going to keep France at bay and obviously England then after that. Have the feels changed? You know, you get yourself a little bit optimistic and then I've started kind of like looking into the France team and you're looking at the players that they have and the quality that they have and the amount of players they have in the Champions League semi-finals, obviously between Lyon and PSG, and it doesn't make for great reading, but I think we know what we're going into. I think we've experienced this before going up against teams that are much higher ranked than us. And essentially it's a shot at nothing because we expect to not do particularly well in this group, but it's all building towards that qualifying playoff. And I think that's at the forefront of my mind. So I'm really just looking forward to seeing how we perform and see, is there a difference between our performances were like under Veer at the World Cup when again we were punching above our weight and what Eileen does and if there's any difference to that. So I think that'll just be interesting from an analysis point of view.
And there is the side of things that we do kind of know what we're getting ourselves into with France and that we have played them in recent memory. I know that game was a little bit different and we were still in that pre-World Cup stage where people were trying to prove themselves and it wasn't necessarily an entirely settled squad in the same way that we have now, and this has the competitive edge which makes it different. But I've been reassuring myself over recent weeks that at least with Sweden and France there's that history there and it's not a total unknown in the way that it might be going up against the European champions.
Yeah, now the history isn't fantastic because if we do think back to that pre-World Cup game, the gulf was pretty evident that day. France, when they needed to turn it on, looked like they were more than capable of doing that. Obviously, Le Sommer, she got a couple of goals in that game. She's still a big, you know, she's been around for a long time, but she's still a big player for this France team. But I assume we'll be looking at Team of the Week in a while and you're looking at the likes of Kenza Daly, and then it's how does our midfield nullify that kind of creative threat that they do have. They are different to Sweden. You know, they are a bit more versatile in how they play. Sweden, we know what to expect a little bit more because we came up against them in those high pressure European or World Cup qualifiers. But I think that France do have more variety about them, but they are also unpredictable. And we hope that they go down that unpredictable and not altogether cohesive route when we play them. But I assume that they'll be wanting to put a mark out as well. You know, it's the first round of their campaign. They'll see themselves as going for that top spot. I know that the group is hugely competitive, and I suppose England are the favourites there. But when you look at that France squad, I wouldn't bet against them. Mm. Would you call it a shock if they beat England? Probably not.
No,
that's
probably
how close
not.
I think that they are to that.
Well, that's the thing with this French team, and I've said it so much on here and also on Off the Ball in general, is that for so long they've had so much potential and they just haven't been able to really tap into it. And a lot of that's probably based on the coach that was there before. And I think a lot of people thought that Hervé Renard would come in and maybe be the man to unlock the magic. And he has to a certain extent.
He nearly did. You know, yeah. You think back to the penalties in the World Cup and how that could have gone differently. But I do think he's brought them to a better level. I do think that they seem more settled at least. And that's always a scary thing when it comes to France.
One of the questions that we had in from our listeners was, what qualities does this Irish squad have that could trouble the French most if we were to look at an area that we could get some sort of positive results? And you can't just say Katie McCabe.
No, I think if we're talking about a result, we're talking about a draw. And I think if we're talking about a draw, we know that we have the ability to frustrate really, really top teams if we don't get completely overrun in midfield. So we know we're probably going to go to the five at the back, but I doubt we'll go 5-3-2. I think it will be more of a 5-4-1 with Caruso up top trying to run the lines and kind of pull Renard out a bit. She did cause her a little bit of trouble. We have seen that before, and she has capabilities of doing that. And we have Denise O'Sullivan back, so she's going to bring a lot in terms of the engine. And her defensive work goes really under the radar as well, because she's so prominent in our attack and she's so key to our attack. But I think if we can really stagnate that middle area, that we have a good chance, because we're going to be sitting low. We're going to be out to frustrate them. And they are a team that can be frustrated. We've seen that when things don't go right for them, they can start to go really wrong for them. And we would hope that that would happen. So I think it's that middle part of the field, getting that right, getting those distances right, is going to be really, really big for us. Making the pitch as small as possible, you know, not letting them get pace and runners in behind. We saw that their fullbacks caused us a lot of problems when we played them in Tala. So just taking the learnings from that. I know that you might think that was a long time ago, but I would look back at those matches. Their squad hasn't changed a huge amount since then. So we know what to expect. Doesn't make it any easier, but it's better than an unknown quantity, I think.
Definitely. I remember walking up to Sydney Opera House and seeing someone very tall walking in front of me, and I was like, oh, some of those backs of those heads look kind of familiar. And it was like Wendy Renard, Eugenie Le Sommer, like half the French team basically. And wow, they're physical
athletes.
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are athletes. I was walking alongside them feeling very small and very insignificant. So that'll be an interesting
It'd be interesting to see if physicality plays into Eileen's selection, whether she goes for, you know, more defensive minded players in that middle of the field. Maybe your Jessie Stapleton, does she provide more of a physical presence than someone else she might be thinking of more in like a 10 role? So it'd be interesting to see if there's much change based on the opposition.
Jessie Stapleton is an interesting name to bring up, because she was asked about Anna Patton coming into the squad, which after all week, everyone being like, oh yeah, there's going to be no surprises in this squad. And then all of a sudden she comes out of nowhere. So she qualifies through her grandparents. Her grandfather is from Falcara in Donegal, and her grandmother is from Lennon Moore in Galway, played with Ireland at underage, or played with England. Jesus, I can't speak today. Played with England at underage levels, was always quite strongly linked to the English team. But obviously, we've seen the strength and depth that team has. It's very, very hard to break into. And at 24, it's understandable that she's potentially looking for other opportunities to play. Played with Katie McCabe and got on really well with her at Arsenal before moving away. Interesting that we're bringing in more players. What do you think a player like Anna Patton can give to this team?
I mean, she's playing week in, week out, WSL, and we always speak about game time, and that's why a lot of the girls have had to drop to the championship. Anna Patton is getting game time at the top level, you know, so week in, week out, she's coming up against players who are, you know, maybe close to the talent that they're going to face from your likes of your Lyons and your PSG players. She's now coming up against your Arsenals and your Chelsea's and players like that. So she has that experience. She has international experience, obviously, with England, but she played at the higher end of the age grades there. So she does have international experience as well. Someone's working hard. Someone has a login to Ancestry DNA anyway. It's been a bit of a pattern that's come, particularly since just before the World Cup. But when the player is of the caliber that Anna Patton is, we can't really say no to that, I don't think. And she's also a versatile player. So I think that there's potentially space for both players. If we go with two sixes. Mm. Anna Patton can obviously play fullback or centre back as well. And then you've got Aoife Mannion there as well. So it will be interesting to see. Obviously, Louise Quinn is back. I think she will come back into the starting squad just because of the presence and the experience that she gives. But there is the options there with Mannion, Caitlin Hayes. You've got Anna Patton there now. So that's probably the most interesting position. We saw that we got a little bit caught for pace maybe in previous games. I don't think that will be an issue because we will play the lower line midfield. So it will be interesting to see if Caitlin Hayes retains her place when that competition is coming in from your Aoife Mannions and your Anna Pattons, who are obviously playing WSL. But on the flip side of that, if we are to attack, a lot of our stuff will come through set pieces. And again, Hayes on the score sheet again, you'll have Hayes and Louise Quinn. So I think that potentially could feed into Eileen's choice as well.
And if you were Eileen and you were to pick, which players would you go with?
Louise centrally. Then I would go with Anna Patton. And I haven't seen enough of Aoife Mannion. I didn't watch the full United game the other day. It's a tough one between Hayes and Mannion for me. Mm.
I suppose it depends as well on Mannion's fitness.
Yeah, potentially, would you be as well to start her?
Yeah, rather than
Hayes coming in, but then obviously it's going to be a really hard game to come in as a centre back. It's like in the GA, it's always a corner forward that gets taken off. It's usually like a winger or a striker that gets taken off. I think they might start Hayes because then you've got Mannion to come in. Mm. We know that Heather Payne will run all day, but can she realistically do that and what's asked of her? So the wing backs are going to be under a lot of pressure to get up and down the line. So we saw Mannion play fullback. So that versatility that she gives more versatility from the bench than Hayes does.
And if we're sitting reviewing this on Wednesday and the two games have finished, is our ideal situation a draw and a loss? Two draws?
Yes.
A draw and a loss?
Like two draws, obviously. if we're saying our prayers now, yeah, two draws. I think a draw out of the two games would be great and would give a lot of confidence looking forward towards the Sweden games in particular, which for some reason we have decided we're going to get points in.
Well, I think it's the only one that we could look at and say, okay, we have
a bit of pedigree there. Yeah.
We have a chance and it should
There's
be
a chance. There's always a chance.
It'll be fine. Speaking of, before we move on to our team of the week, I just want to very quickly ask you about the weekend's action in the league here, because it was exciting, wall-to-wall
stuff.
It was
exciting. it was. we nearly saw kind of a clean sweep of surprises, only that Galway pulled it out of the bag against Sligo right at the death. But it keeps
so rude
them on
of them.
Top.
So rude.
I know. They could have given you a big bank holiday boost, but yeah. Fair play to Sligo. They really, really put it up to them. Shows the development there, because, like I said, I think Galway are, they're absolutely flying it, and they're well worth their place on the top of that. I suppose the standout game was always going to be Athlone and Shells. A lot of people would have tipped them at the start of the year. They were obviously the cup finalists last year, Athlone coming out on top there, only to be... Yeah, so it was a tight one. Obviously, Maddie Gibson on the score sheet right at the death. I think that Shelburne will be a little bit disappointed, having held them out for so long in Athlone. That pitch is big, but tired legs. But she was just given too much space at the edge of the box, and she's too good of a player to allow that much space. So I don't know if either of them will be overly happy with that, but you know, it's still a point gained more than anything. And another big story, I guess, is Cork getting points on the board against Bowes.
That was a really big result for them.
Yeah. And for it to be happening this early in the season is good. It will give them a lot more confidence, considering where they were coming from last season, a lot of people doubting them and stuff. So that will give them great belief going forward. And Treaty United drawing with Shamrock Rovers in Talla Stadium. I think that's significant, the fact that it was in Talla Stadium. And yeah, Treaty really the unknown quantity because of all the new players, the Canadian players that have come in, and certainly adding to the excitement and to the shocks of the weekend. So it's definitely the weirdest kind of maybe start to a season, because everyone's dropping points.
Mm.
I expected it, but if you were just going off form of previous years, you probably wouldn't have expected that at this point, three games in.
I'm enjoying it, I have to say, as a spectator. It's making for far more interesting viewing, and you feel like every game you go into, it's not the same certainty going into them that a certain team is going to get a result. Which...
And even say for us as players, previously you'd be like, oh, we've dropped points now, we could struggle to get that back. But because everyone is dropping points, we won a game at the weekend, and now all of a sudden we're right back in it, you know. So I think there's going to be a lot of ebbing and flowing as it goes on. People are still finding their feet a little bit, and obviously we have another break now. Then I think after this international break is when teams will really kick on, and we'll start to see a few more front runners. But yeah, all exciting so far.
I love
a bit of neutral.
Karen's like, I want a stress-free year, please. Everyone else drop points and not P-melt.
Please and thank you, yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, we don't have any Emma Carroll this week, but she very kindly did actually send us a team of the week because she was laid up and had lots of time to watch football, which is great for us, Karen. So I will run through this, and then we can have a bit of a chat off the back of it before we go to Jillie Flaherty to look at the weekend's action. So in goal, she has Leeds Cup, and then back line of Sophie Howard, Alex Greenwood and Taylor Hines, Lisa Nalsund, Kenza Daly, Ella Toon, Jess Park, and then Lucia Garcia, Lauren Hemp and Bunny Shaw. I feel like Bunny Shaw just has like gotten that permanent position in the team.
She's captain of the team of the week. Let's just leave it at that. She's undroppable from team of the week.
Her goal at the weekend was...
It was outrageous.
Sublime.
My jaw was on the floor. And it was the little touch around the centre defender that she meant. And then as soon as it hit or left her foot, it was game over. Like it was nearly burst the net. And she has that now. She can score from outside the box. She's obviously got a header as well. So, yeah, Bunny Shaw keeps in the form that she's in now. God help us all, but you nearly put City as favourites. I think she's that big of an influence on the team.
Definitely. She kind of reminds me of when Miedema first came to Arsenal before her injury, and she had those couple of record-breaking seasons, and... It just gave you such a certainty about how Arsenal were going to perform, and the fact that no matter what, even if it was a semi not great performance, she would pop up and get a goal.
She's unmarkable, essentially. Mm. So even if, the team you say are underperforming, you give her a few chances, it'll be great. And she can create chances herself as well, just with the power that she has. So, she's certainly worth her place there. in terms of the rest of the team, I mean, there was a lot of people on par, so it was, we could debate it a lot. I wouldn't take too many people out. I'd have, obviously, Hines came on at halftime for Liverpool, and Liverpool were taking a battering there. So I don't know if you'd put a Liverpool player in, just because there was it was a City's game all day, you know, really.
I do actually have Emma's reasoning for this. And she said, she likes to send me notes just to make sure that we don't take her too out of context or anything. She said, came back, played second half and was excellent, changed the game for Liverpool, probably should claim the goal, but also it's a pity because they lost the game in about a 25-minute period and she could have had more of an impact.
Yeah, like, nah. In hindsight, I don't think anyone was stopping Man City at the weekend. I think that they were unbelievable. And with that, I possibly would have looked at Alexandri coming into that backline. They were just so fluid everywhere, though. Everyone was setting up attacks. So, yeah, Greenwood was in there doing the business. And every week, I'll just love watching Hasegawa. So, but I won't take it away from Naslund, because it's good to see a bit of Man United representation. I feel like it's been a while since we've had something to talk about there. But even saying that, Lucia Garcia, yeah, she was instrumental to the things United did, and she brings that energy and pace. And I think that a lot of people need to kind of follow suit with her. But at the same time, Mary Fowler is keeping Chloe Kelly out of Man City's team. And she was excellent again at the weekend.
Emma did have Mary Fowler as one of her honorable mentions. And also another name that she mentions, which is one that I had, was Mom Kiki. Thought she was really impressive for Leicester.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, like the Leicester Villa game was interesting, because again, you've got Howard in there for City, but I thought Moritz was really good for Villa. So both ends of the pitch, they were both doing really well, but definitely Mamiki, you know, Villa got the first goal, Mamiki came back and responded almost straight away, and had a really good performance in that midfield area. A lot of central players in there today. We're after pushing, we've got Jess Park, we've got Ella Toon, Dali, Naslund. Yeah, a lot of central players, but they were all worth their place, you'd have to say.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see if Jess Park gets many minutes against Ireland at the Aviva next week, because I feel like she's just been... I don't want to see it necessarily.
I don't even know what I want to see. I don't know if I want to see that because she's not a regular starter for England, or if it terrifies me because she's in absolutely outrageous form for Man City.
Oy.
I don't know. It's Ryan Panfire.
Yeah, I know. I don't really know what a good outcome is or a good place, but hopefully we will get a little bit more about that with Gillie Flaherty when she joins us now to look ahead to the WSL or to the international action next week, and also look back on the WSL action over the weekend. And now we are delighted to be joined by the one and only Gillie Flaherty, who's quick becoming a good friend of the podcast over the last few weeks. Gillie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. We're a little bit intimidated heading into this European qualifying set of fixtures. We have France away on Friday, and then England coming to town on Tuesday at the Aviva for what should be an absolutely brilliant game. And if you haven't got your tickets, anyone that's listening, please do get them and come along. Myself and Karen will be there, so you can do some celeb spotting. That was totally a joke. But Gillie, from an English point of view, how are you guys feeling going into these games?
Well, I think it's a hard draw for England. I think obviously, France and Sweden, I think it's going to be obviously difficult. I think they're both top teams. And I also think, I'm excited to see the England versus Ireland. I think it's a fiery game, maybe with a few individuals, really, in the sense when I talk about that. But I don't think for 1 second it's going to be easy for England. And I think coming off, obviously, the back of the Nations League, which they should have done a lot better in, you know, and obviously you're looking at they would have looked at, they should have beat the Netherlands and they should have beat Belgium and they should have topped that group. That don't mean nothing. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter in your, where your standings are or who's favourite. At the end of the day, like I said, it's a football game, man. It's whoever turns up. So, yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm off to Wembley on Friday for that game. So I'm excited for it. But, I don't think it'll be an easy task for England.
We hope not, from an Irish perspective anyways, if we have to have any hope going into these. One of the things that I thought was interesting, I saw a lot of English fans commentating on over the last couple of days, was when our squad was announced and Anna Patton was in there, played with England at underage level. There hadn't really been any indications over this side of the water that was coming in was something that she was contemplating. And I saw a couple of people discussing the English youth structures and maybe a little bit of concern about those players who did feature really prominently, but now are just like finding it really hard to get into what is an extremely competitive and pretty set squad as well. You really need to be performing and like wowing people to get into that England squad with Serena Wiegmann.
Yeah, and then listen, in all honesty, when I was in the England youth, it got to the, I think the under-21s, under-23s at the time, and I couldn't get a look in. And I was actually looking at my Irish roots to come over, but unfortunately it was my, even though obviously I got the Irish surname, it was my great nan. So I couldn't, I couldn't get it. But if I'd have had my nan or granddad was enough that I could have gone, I would have gone over, because I think, and that was back then, you know, that was obviously back then in a few years ago, but it is difficult. And it's, you know, England do have such a good youth setup, and there's a lot of players that will play all the games in the youth setup and will never feature for England seniors. That's just the way the football is. And I think players are now, they know it's even more difficult. The more successful England are, it's even harder to get in. And they want to play English, they want to play international football.
Well, Karen, when we were discussing it earlier, had her walking straight into our team despite our illustrious options in defence. Well, it's generally one of our better placed
yeah,
positions
it is, but
on
I mean,
the team.
She's just playing at a high level, and that can't be ignored. So if she comes in and she makes any sort of impression, I think it's really hard to ignore it. And like Judy's talking about, it's getting harder and harder for girls featuring at underage England set up to break into the senior squad. That's going to become the case for Ireland as well, unless we really focus on our grassroots, because there's going to continue to be an influx of players from England or Wales or Scotland, whoever has the heritage, unless we really look after our underage structure. So we probably need to be looking at what England are doing and the rate that they're producing this talent, and at least be able to compete with this on, you know, an international level, because at the end of the day, it's an Irish national team, and like you have to have homegrown talent in there as well. So it's brilliant to have the likes of Anna Patton coming into the squad, but as well, it should be a little bit of a warning fire for us that we need to look after our underage structures, and we need to look at developing a professional league here, because we've got no one from our league currently in this squad. And while that was expected, it's not a brilliant reflection on where we are at the ground, and it just shows the levels that we have to get to in order to bring our national team to the next step and make success a continuous thing, because you can't always rely on, you know, the granny rule.
But we love a good granny rule, though.
We do. It's benefited us an awful lot, we have to say. And I don't begrudge anyone playing international football or if they've got that heritage. It's just important that we don't become reliant on it. Because at the end of the day, it's England's conveyor belt of talent that we're benefiting off, and that might not always be the case.
Safe to say as well, Julie, that if you had qualified for Ireland, we would have very happily accepted you into the fold. To look at some of the weekend's action, start with the Conti Cup, because it had so many different talking points, and the thing we're probably all concentrated on after the game was the interaction between Jonas Eidevall and Emma Hayes, where she rejected his handshake, gave him a little shove, walked away after the way that he spoke, or the way that she felt he spoke to Aaron Cuthbert during the game. I feel like that has overshadowed what was quite a dramatic match, in that you had Frieda Manum collapsing off the ball. Arsenal released a statement today saying that she was conscious the whole time. They're continuing to do tests, but she's in good form, which is really positive, because when you see something like that happen on the pitch, your heart immediately drops and you just don't know what to expect. So it's great that she's doing well. But Stina Blaksenius as well, popping up once again. Jilly, putting the haze and stuff aside for a moment, this actual game, a lot of people were saying it was more important for Arsenal than it was for Chelsea. I don't think that was necessarily true. I think it puts a different slant on Arsenal's season, yes. But also, I think those failures when it comes to the league and the Champions League are still very much going to be at the forefront for them.
Yeah, well, I think, listen, I think it's, I don't think for either club it was more important, but I think for Arsenal, they had to win something this year. And I think that they obviously, they had a bad start to the season, not even getting into the Champions League, getting knocked out of them. They was in the running with the title. They then lose points there. They then come up against Man City in the FA Cup and they literally lose that. So really, all they had to fight for was the Continental Cup. And, you know, it is sort of Arsenal's trophy because they've won it so many times over the years. But there was, I think, pressure on them to win it and to get a trophy, especially on Jonas as well. And the fans were wanting it. But also, you're looking at Emma, that for Chelsea, there was all this talk in the past 3-4 months of the quadruple. Are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? And Chelsea just have no luck with this trophy whatsoever. Emma's obviously triples out the way. That's not happening. So now it's what's next. I just found, though, out of all the games that Chelsea and Arsenal played against each other this season, that was probably the most boring one, in my opinion.
So boring.
And it was because I think both teams were, yeah, so both teams were so reserved with it because it's hard to go, because when they've played each other, it's not been like a 1-0 or 2-0. It's been like a 3-4-1 either side. So I think, I thought Chelsea was going to go in there the stronger one because they'd sort of got one over on Arsenal only a few weeks ago. But it was just the complete opposite. And I felt like it was both teams very reserved, both teams afraid to make a mistake because they didn't want the other one to punish them. And pressures on both clubs to bring the trophy home for different reasons.
Definitely. And Karen, I think I totally agree with you that it was quite a boring game. And when you look at the Arsenal men's side, it was just a general day for it, I think, in that they were up against opponents that have got the better of them before, but also knew that they could go toe-to-toe with. So there was almost a lack of creativity or a lack of willing to maybe try anything too adventurous.
Yeah, a little bit. I think that the most recent match would have been a massive factor in the game. They really fell apart against Chelsea in that league game. But Adeville talked about them managing pressure situations, and it's easier to manage a pressure situation if you're given a very stringent job and you say, okay, let's nullify the opponent and work our way into the game. Then it's just that it never really kicked on. It never really came to light or came to life on either side. If maybe the goal ruled out for VAR had been allowed, I think maybe we would have seen a more end-to-end battle, but Arsenal really didn't want to go down the route they did, obviously, and capitulate the way they did as in the league. So I understand why their tactics were the way they were. And at the end of the day, they came out with a trophy from that, and they can reference this as they go into next season. I think that's important. They can say, okay, well, we beat Chelsea because we were able to manage the occasion. We need to start doing that more consistently. So as well as it putting a more positive spin on their season, it gives them a little bit of a platform mentally for next year, which I think was important for them, because I think there was a lot of questions around them after that last Chelsea result, and probably rightfully so, and questions around Adeville, and rightfully so. And I think, yeah, he's always involved, isn't he?
He is always involved.
Has that head on him.
He's weird because I actually view him as quite a bland man, but he seems to attract the ire of his opposition managers quite a lot. You've had Gareth Taylor before saying that he should have been sent off for the way he was talking to assistant managers during the game. And then Emma Hayes as well, the whole incident at the weekend. And the two of them have had a constant back and forth over the years. Compared to her relationship with Taylor, there's been a lot more public jabbing at each other between Adeville and Hayes. You know, you had Hayes meowing in a press conference because Jonas Eidevall said that he didn't like black cats, which, you know, it's just a statement that I never thought I would say on the radio, but here we are. Do you think, Jilly, that, like, did things get a little bit overboard on Sunday? Because I think, you know, whatever about the shove, I think that was neither here nor there. But I think some of the comments afterwards from Emma Hayes were maybe a little bit misplaced in terms of the seriousness
male
of things.
Aggression. Is it that?
Yeah, the male aggression.
Yeah. Male aggression. And then the clip is of her pushing him. So it's sort of a bit like, you know, it's a bit of a hypocritical in that sense. But I think, listen, I think I said this yesterday that things get very tense in football, and I would be probably the first person in a game to row with my centre forward that I'm marking. I'd want to offer him out. I'd want to fight him. I'd want to do everything to him. And as soon as the final whistle went, I'd give him a hug. And I think it all started when Jonas beat Emma at the Emirates and done a knee slide. Mm. I think that is... but I just think, like, the incident that they're talking about on Sunday was... Chelsea had wanted a one-ball system and Arsenal wanted a multi-ball system. Now, that gets decided the week of the final. Then in the game, Chelsea are losing. So Erin Cuthbert, the ball goes out and Erin Cuthbert wants to go and get a ball quickly to play on. So Jonas, you can see him, he's very animated, saying, no, 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 no. Like, obviously, that's not what you've asked for. Now, obviously, you see Erin go back at him, but there's no mics down there for us to hear what is actually being said between them. It's just, obviously, Erin's gone towards him. Whatever's happened, happened. So obviously that's then her point of saying that he was obviously aggressive on the sideline and that he's obviously should have been probably sent off and stuff. But obviously no one is really any the wiser what was actually said between any of them down there. But you can probably understand Jonas's frustration in the sense of, well, hold on a minute, you wanted one thing and then we go 1-0 up and now you want the other thing that you didn't want. So it's a bit tit for tat, really, isn't it? It's a bit like, come on, you know, the bigger picture of it all. But I do think that the result and everything else has probably been not tarnished, but the talking point is them two rather than actually the game of football.
Yeah, and it wasn't much. Like, I would know from my own experience, if I give it to a manager and if they're a male or a female and they give it back to me, that's fair enough because I've probably started it. Or, like, it's just part of the in-game kind of emotions of it. I think as long as it doesn't spill to the post-match stuff, which Emma Hayes let it, I think that's the only disappointing thing that became the talking point. Like, if you have a little spat on the sideline, it doesn't get picked up as much by the cameras, doesn't get as honed in on by social media. And I think that's all it is, really. It's just what to do about nothing because there wasn't a huge amount of other highlights from the game.
Yeah, well, we all know Emma Hayes. She is not a fond loser. It is not her favourite thing to do. So possibly slightly unsurprising that she was a little bit sore after that game, especially with it going to extra time and everything. Karen, I want to quickly touch on your beloved Manchester United because a big win for them at the weekend. We see Ella Toon hitting a milestone for United, becoming the first female player to score 50 goals for them, getting that brace over Everton in a 4-1 win. Slightly surprising scoreline, you'd have to say. I feel like Everton haven't really been at the end of any massive hidings and you would have felt that United this season is massively far ahead of them.
Yeah, they haven't been in the way United have been playing. You wouldn't expect them to be putting four goals because they haven't been overly prolific. But, you know, Everton, they've had to, you know, rotate a good bit recently as well. And I think that they've done as well as they could up to this point. And there's going to be games like this when you have that rotation and that inconsistency in their team. And Man United really needed a big result. It's still disappointing that it took for them to go a goal down and for it to be the second half for United to really stamp their authority on the game. And again, it was Millie Turner kind of set piece that they were relying on. But I'm really happy for Ella Toon because, you know, with the departures that happened during the summer, she's the talisman of the team, her and Mary Earps. And then there was all the speculation around Mary Earps' future. So a lot was falling on Ella Toon's feet and she just isn't getting the same supply and the same link-up play that she would have been with Russo. So it's been hard for her. So for her to get two goals and reach that milestone, it's it's great for her. It's great for Man United. I still think obviously there's work to be done, but you have Galton back on the score sheet. She was a lot more prolific last year as well. So hopefully it's the tide turning a little bit, just in time for them to get that third or that fourth place, because, you know, they're going to want to have a big summer transfer wise, and the higher up the table they are, the obviously the more attractive an outfit that they become. So yeah, really, really good win, really good to see them get four goals, but just if they could keep a clean sheet, that would be nice.
You would take that. Gilly, speaking of that fourth place, Liverpool are the ones that have been in contention with Manchester United. I'm not sure if anyone necessarily expected them to get a massive result against the likes of City, just with the form that City are in. But there was just that 25-minute period where they really lost the run of the game and they just couldn't bring it back in.
Yeah, and I just think, obviously, it was like, what, 3 goals or something in 7 minutes. Like, it's just, I think that's sometimes Liverpool's problem. I think for me, Liverpool missed a big chance the previous weekend and not beating Everton. I think if they beat Everton there's huge points to gain a little bit away from United, but they didn't do it. Again, that was one of the most boring games as well, I think, I've seen this season, from a derby as well. But no, I think that's the difference. I think Liverpool for me can be the best of the rest this year, and I think that's huge for Liverpool as a football club, because they've only obviously been in the league like 2 years anyway, back after getting promoted. And obviously, then once you sustain that, and you're able to finish it, then you're able to attract a lot more better players to come next year and the year after. But yeah, I just think that just shows the gulf in difference between the two clubs, is, you know, and to then concede and then concede and concede again, like, it's ridiculous. But it's just that Liverpool will learn more from that game than potentially going to beat Aston Villa or beat Leicester. Do you know what I mean? They'll learn from more of that as a team. And obviously, I think when you listen to Beardy afterwards, he just said, listen, Man City, for me, thinks they're going to win it. You know, you can't give a team like Man City that much space and respect. And once they turn it on, Man City, then, you know, they're lethal. And I also think, again, obviously, like Karen said about Man United with conceding goals, City need to stop doing that, because this potentially league could go down to goal difference. And the last 3 games they've played, they've given away 4 goals that will end up potentially hurting them. So yeah, I think it's a positive result for City. And like I said, I think it's just a learning result for Liverpool.
Yeah, if you look at City and Chelsea, their goal difference at the moment, City are on 37 and Chelsea are on 36. So that's 49 goals for City, and then 12 against, and then Chelsea have 50 goals and 14 against. So it'll be interesting to see how that does come into play over the next couple of weeks. Chelsea still have a game in hand over City, just because they didn't play this weekend with the fact that they were in the Conte Cup. In the other two fixtures this weekend, we had 2 draws. So Aston Villa 2, Leicester City 2, and then West Ham also drawing 0-0 with Brighton. So it wasn't the best weekend of action, you'd have to say, across the board. There was a lot. I feel like Villa's Leicester was interesting in that we've seen Villa struggle so much this season, and then also Leicester consistently throwing up these players that are really talented, having really good games. Karen, we talked about Munkiki in the player in our team of the week. You just feel they're the sort of team that if they get a couple more of those names, they can keep pushing up the table. Obviously had a really difficult week with Willie Kirk departing there. Gilly, for you, what do Leicester need to do to maintain the progress that we've seen from them over the last couple of seasons?
It's obviously their decision whether they're going to stick with the interim managers or they're going to look now to potentially bring someone in at the end of the season. Obviously with Willie Kirk going, I think when Willie came in, he really shored them up defensively, but they couldn't score goals. And then what they've done this year is they then recruited players who are able to score goals, and they've been more of a complete team. So I think, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do, because I think it's hard with Leicester, because it potentially could be a project for whether their interim managers take over. But I just think you can't not necessarily can't really risk having a manager in there with really not much experience in the WSL, because you only need to lose a few really run of the games at the start of next season and you potentially could be in a relegation battle again. So it's a difficult one. I think they'll see the people who took over now will see them until the end of the season, and then they're not in a relegation fight. No, they're enough away from it. But I think there's a great setup there. The facilities, you know, they've got the investment to really push on. And I think Liverpool's given a lot of other teams hope this year, because Liverpool's investment hasn't necessarily been huge. They're not going to sign players for thousands and thousands of pounds. A lot of them, they've got on free transfers. But it's about doing the right recruitment. And I think Leicester just need to get through this season, get a bit settled, you know, and then decide obviously what they do manager-wise, and then kick on for next season.
Yes, very intrigued to see how they manage the next couple of weeks and what they decide to do. Again, there's only, what, 3 games left of the season, so it could be a case of keeping the interim team in there for the next couple of games and then deciding during the summer what they want to do more permanently. Gilly, thank you very much for joining us. A pleasure as always. Hope you enjoy Wembley on Friday, and hopefully don't enjoy the game too much on Tuesday, because that will not be a good sign for us. Karen, as always,
please. A draw.
Yeah.
We'll take that. We'll take a draw so that all English-Irish relations stay intact. The Koi Gig podcast on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. We will have plenty of updates for you over the course of the international break, so keep an eye on your podcast feed. And if you want to follow all the updates from the team, I will be in France for that game and also at the Aviva, and we will have lots of info at the Koi Gig pod on Twitter. Any injury updates, any potential things you need to worry about, or maybe something good. Maybe something good will happen over the next couple of days. Who knows? Thank you all very, very much for listening, and we will see you all again very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.